Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
Ken, I'm going to say something I thought I would never say to
Uh-oh.
You. Happy Valentine's Day, big fella.
Wow.
You know?
How do I take that?
I don't know. I don't know how you take it. Is this one a special year for you guys? How long have you been married?
This will be in May. We'll be 23.
So we're, yeah.
We're approaching.
You waited
yes.
a little bit. So, all right. So you got a big one coming in 2 years.
Yeah.
And this is our 31st in November, so we probably won't have... Wait a minute. Actually, it might have been the 30... No, it will be the 31st. I had to think about that. 88. You know, once you get to a certain point, buddy,
it's
just like that. They'll remind me on the important ones. And speaking of important, we've got a big show for you today. We are going to cover a risk and volatility. I'm finally writing my book, Ken.
Uh-oh.
And they begged me for years... Technology is finally there where I can write it. The 7 years I taught at Purdue, so 14 semesters, there was not 1 year where I didn't have to correct myself, not one semester. And it wasn't because I was wrong, it was because things change,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I've always refused to write a book. Well, now I'm writing a book of the truisms of life, critical retirement decisions that will, or critical tax decisions rather, that will impact your retirement. But there's a QR reader. And so the stuff that can change, like the 2018 1040, the stuff that can change, you can put on your phone and go to an updated video to be able to get it. But one of the things that I have to write about in the book, they say, what are some of the myths in your industry? And we're going to get into that right in the very first conversation. One of those is that money is all about need, not about age.
Hmm.
So people have been told the older they get, the more quote-unquote conservative they should be. We're going to break that down. We're going to go into a conversation over real return and the real risks that are there, the difference between needs versus wants. We'll talk a little bit about deduction stacking with the better giver, and then we're going to talk about going to the gym. So, yes, I got my 42 minutes on the elliptical this morning, and my body is not one bit happy about it today, today. But I'm willing to bet over the future years that it will be happy that I took the time to do it. And really, that boils down into a lot of the stuff that we talk inside of financial planning. So, Ken, you had your big event at the Super Bowl. We were talking about some of your charitable gifting.
Yep.
How much did you guys end up raising?
We don't know yet. You know, last year, they raised over $1 million in Minnesota, where the Taste of the NFL was founded. This year, Atlanta was a little bit busier as far as the city, so we were a little bit less busier. So I think we'll still raise over $900,000.
Cool.
Divided up between 32 different food banks across the country.
We'll talk about that again during the Better Giver. You're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. We got to take a break, and we'll get right back into the show.
Hi, I'm Ken Dilger, co-host of Consider This with Joe Clark. Joe is a certified financial planner and former professor at Purdue University. Joe is the managing partner for the Financial Enhancement Group, and Joe's passion is teaching people about their money so they don't make inefficient financial decisions. Find out more at yourlifeafterwork.com. The Financial Enhancement Group manages more than $390 million for families in 31 states. Join Joe and me as we address your questions about money and five critical elements of finance: retirement planning, tax planning, investment planning, life happens, the good, the bad, and the ugly of life, and legacy planning. Each week, we will tackle questions that can make a difference in your life. The Financial Enhancement Group can be reached at 1-800-928-4001. The Financial Enhancement Group is an SEC registered investment advisor. Securities offered through World Equity Group, Inc., member FINRA, SBIC. You can find out more at our website, yourlifeafterwork.com.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
So there are three stages of finance. You hear me talk about them all the time. If you want to know more about those, you can go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com to look them up. But they're, in our mind, accumulation, preservation, and distribution. And in each phase, you need to be looking at something that's different than the next stage. So different goals and objectives, if you will. But one of those in the investment playbook that we talk about in the five critical elements is risk and volatility. And I would argue that you look at risk and volatility differently in each of those three stages. So I'm going to bring up something near and dear to our hearts.
And what's that?
Well, you know, Adam, my chief investment strategist, is a CFA. And Adam is a stats nut, right? Now, just so we all know, I taught at Purdue. Adam went to IU,
Right?
So there's a little bit of that. So he is not necessarily a Drew Brees fan, because Drew went to Purdue. I know. It's Adam. You know, what are you going to do, right? Here's the point. When in the fateful call that was clearly wrong on two counts, Adam said, you know, it was really a stupid play anyhow because the percentage of completion was much lower than what they needed to have success at that time. Now, do you remember in your career, Ken, if you don't know, Ken played in the NFL for 10 years as a tight end. Do you remember them talking about stats and percentages of plays?
Stats is always a big key in the NFL. Percentage of plays, it depends on how you look at the game. On the offensive side, you look at, they kind of scout yourself.
Right.
As far as what percentage of plays you call on first down, second down, third down, short yardage, 2 minute, all that kind of stuff. So
I've seen all that.
Yes.
I just, you know, he was just you know.
Now hindsight's 20/20 for Adam.
It's easy for us to play backwards.
You know, look at Seattle and New England, years ago? I'm sure Seattle would rather run the ball.
Have that over.
Yes.
Do over. All right, so let's get into risk and volatility because that's really what it is. In football, risk is the play's not completed, the down's not accomplished, right? And you lose the ball. Risk in investing is you actually don't get your money back.
Correct.
Right? And it typically happens with private placement deals, things that are not publicly traded equities. And every now and then it happens in what's called the fixed income world, which are bonds. So when you go to buy a bond, one of the things that you're going to look at is the credit rating. And it's going to talk about your default risk, the possibility that you either don't get the income or that you don't get your money back. Okay. Volatility is the fluctuation of what it says it's worth at any given moment. Right. So it's not necessarily losing money. And I've told you on this radio show before, stocks are not risky. That was politics in action in the Great Depression. FDR and the fireside chats interjected the word risk as opposed to speculation. You cannot in your mind ever think anything positive about risk. Doesn't matter what I say, you cannot find a positive thing that says risky. And stocks do indeed go up.
Mm-hmm.
The sad news is they also go down.
Right.
Right. They are speculative. They are not risky. And it's critical to understand that in your mindset of how you invest. So there are a couple things that we look at. And here's one of those myths that I think we need to talk about. Because in my industry, I was raised in the securities world where I had a license where I could sell things. Never liked it. Didn't understand it. It made no sense to me. And in 2000, we took on the role, actually 99, we took on the role of being registered investment advisors, though we used other people to manage the money. In 2000, we took on that job internally, if you will. And when you have a securities license, under the FINRA thing, when you sell things, you are told the older somebody is, the more fixed income they should have. So, you know, Ken's parents are, you know, a little bit younger or a little bit older than he is, but not what we would call old yet. And if they went to see a broker, somebody might say, you can still have 70% in equities. But your grandparents, if they're still with us, you know, they would be saying, oh, no, you need to have more fixed income. Now, newsflash, guys, bond brokers make much more money than stockbrokers. Just so you know, bonds die, stocks don't. Right. So the bonds have a death date on them. And so there's a natural drive to get people to want to buy bonds as they get older. Think about the baby boom, the mass of people that are there born between 1957 and 1961. That's the peak of the baby boom. We talk about 1944 to 1964 as the baby boom itself, but the real mass is that 1957 to 1961 people. And so here's what I've tried to tell people as long as I could. Money, how you invest, is a function of need, not age. So Ken just turned a whopping 48. I know that because I just turned a whopping 42, right? So we're 4 years apart, just like my little brother, and right there, ready to roll. So Ken, who needs their money sooner, you and me or our daughters that are in college?
Boy, that's a good question. As far as investment money?
No, any money.
Any money. Well, I would say the daughters in college.
Yeah, because they got to pay tuition, right? Now,
well, we got to pay tuition.
We're writing checks, but you know, presuming that we weren't writing checks or that they were doing it on their own, right? They technically need their money before we do.
Correct.
And it's very easy to get caught up in that game. When my wife's grandmother passed away at age 98, she had 70% of her money in equities. It was the middle of the 2000s. The multiples were good. The market was good. You could get a CD at 4.5 or 5, or be invested in a market that was doing wonderful things. You know, so it's, you know, when you look at this, you really have to stop and ask yourself economically where you are in terms of what's going on. So when people come in, I like to talk about driving. You know, cars make sense to everybody because most of us have driven at one point in time or another. And when I look at people's portfolio, because they will say, Joe, what do you think? You know, what's going on? You know, I always put it in the stage, are you driving too fast? Are you driving too slowly? Or are you driving just about right for where you are in what matters in life? And again, that can be different if you're in the accumulation phase, the preservation phase, or the distribution phase. And if you're not familiar with those terms, I'm sure you'll hear them again on the radio. But you can always go to our website and watch a video that I did specifically on those, just so that you get an understanding of what's going on. So what's driving too fast? Driving too fast is, in our opinion, opening yourself up to too much volatility when you may have a need for income, right? I've said things on the radio, like if you put money in a Roth IRA, Ken, you can always get your principal back. Well, that's sort of true. From a tax perspective, you can always pull your money right back out the next year if you're able to qualify for a Roth contribution. But that doesn't mean that the market is going to be up, right? So you may actually be pulling out less than what you put in. So you have the tax issue and you've got the investment issue. Are you driving too fast? And that's usually when you can't afford volatility because you may need to have access to some of that income along the way. Are you driving too slowly? And we're going to talk about that in the next conversation when we get into what's called real return and another, I won't call it a myth, but something that concerns me about people and in investing. And that's when they're so worried about not running out of money that they forget that the money still has to be able to buy stuff, right? It's what we call purchasing power. So here's what I want you to take away from this segment. Ask yourself, are you driving too fast? Are you driving too slow? Are you driving just about right for what your needs are today? Don't pay attention to your age. Don't look in the mirror. Money is not about gray hair. It's not about youth. Money truly is about your need, both today and tomorrow and in your future, and what it is you're trying to accomplish. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. Hope you're having an outstanding day. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email. ConsiderThis@yourlifeafterwork.com. Ken and I'll take a break. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
We are happy to have you along. Ken, when I say the word real return, what does that mean to you?
I would say it means your net return minus any taxes you got to pay out of that.
It's close. Inflation.
Inflation.
That's very, very close, though. And actually, I would even argue that that's not how it's used in the industry. Whenever you hear us talk about real, you'll hear them talk about nominal GDP or inflate. You know, the real. Real simply means inflation adjusted. But I like the idea of adding in your taxes over that. Now, one of the things that interests me in 31 years of being in the financial services industry are the number of people who come in who are afraid of dying too soon. Right?
They
come in and they kind of use that conversation to defend whatever argument they're trying to make today, right? So they're going to take Social Security early. Actually, 70% of the population, please don't be one of those, 70% of the population literally takes their money at 62 from Social Security because that's the first year you can get it. And keep in mind, every year you take it early, Ken, you lose 6% from your full retirement age. Every year you wait after your full retirement age up to age 70, that's the latest you should wait under the current code, you actually gain another 8% per year. So the difference between 62 and 70 is tremendous. For a couple that both worked, many times the cash flow is estimated to be more than $500,000 over their lifetime that they gave away
because they
took Social Security early. And one of the primary arguments is, well, I may die too soon, right? Then they turn around and they say, well, Joe, I've got to make sure that my money doesn't run out. And I am right there with you. You do want to make sure that your money doesn't run out. But keep in mind, it's only half of the equation. You also need your money to be able to buy whatever it is you want or whatever it is you need. Okay? So one of the things that we do at the Financial Enhancement Group is when people come in to prepare for retirement, we want to help them break down their budget. Now, ideally, when people come to see us, it's a couple years before they head into retirement. Sometimes we have people come a lot sooner. Sometimes we have people who've already started it and going, hey, this isn't working. It's time for me to make an adjustment. You know, I've been trying to do it my own out of my 401k, you know, something of that nature. But we try to help them have a retirement practice year. And Ken, what we do with that is help you sit down and help you make a budget. Now, I'm going to put me in hot water. You may have a budget. Joe does not have a budget. That's because Joe had the last budget he had. There was more month than money. And I just emotionally can't go back to it. So I don't see much of the money. It goes into various accounts. Right. You know, I get a little spending money and that's kind of the deal. You know, I do get an envelope. It's very small money, fives and ones that I take to the golf course at the beginning of the year. And I remind my buddies as they pilfer me all year long. Right. Because I never win. I give it to save families at the end of the year. So every time I have to give somebody $2, I remind them that's coming out of the hands of little kids.
Like a charity, you just kind of give your money away, right?
Yeah, and I expect them to do the same. Anyhow, back to the point here. I don't want you to miss half the equation. So when we do that retirement budget, what we do is break it down into two chunks. There are the things that are fixed expenses, Ken, that you are going to need to have whether you're 55, 65, or 95. You have to eat, right? We do need to have shelter of some nature. But the other part of that is social expenses. That's the desire to go do stuff. And what we know nationally is that about age 65, discretionary spending peaks. Now, in our practice at the Financial Enhancement Group, it's been closer to 68. But you can look across the board and you can just watch that number start to go down. Now, you have to understand the significance of this because, Ken, I'm trained. If you came in and you said, hey, I'm 48 years old. I want to retire at 62. Here's the budget I think I need. First of all, nobody's broken it down into social and fixed because they don't think about that. We weren't trained that way academically. I wasn't trained that way as a CFP. I wasn't trained that way at Purdue. You know, we put it into one big number. We say, okay, between 48 and 62, how much does that spending power have to grow? That's all based on inflation. And then we take your life expectancy from 62. And if you and your wife both make it to 60 in reasonable health, they tell us there's a 90% probability one of the two of you make it to 90. It's 28 more years, right?
Wow.
That's a long time money has to last. And that's that danger of living too long that we're talking about, or the purchasing power going out. I don't want your money to run out, right? But I also want it to be able to buy what it is that you need, right? So you have to have some respect for inflation, especially when you're looking at a 28-year period of time, if you will. All right, so we go into this process. We figure out what those expenditures really need to be academically, not the way we do it here, academically. And then we look over your life expectancy. We add 5 years because that gets us to the 96th percentile, according to the actuarial people, right? And then we say, Ken, here's how much money you have to have in a bank to be able to retire at 62. And you go, Joe, don't think we're going to make it, right? And so you end up working a few more years because somebody had this big, bold, ugly budget that said this is what the Dilger family needed to be able to maintain their standard of living. And what I have found over 31 years of doing this is I now have a lot of 90-year-olds with a lot of money, but not a lot of life, you know, because we put it all into one budget like I was trained.
Right.
So here we say, ain't going to do it. We're going to break it down. So you tell me how much money you spend on food and stuff that you have to have, and we'll inflate that. But the money that you're going to use to go see the Grand Canyon, to visit grandkids, to go to Italy, you know, the social stuff that we know will deteriorate between 68 and 70, we're going to flatline that so that every year you have less purchasing power, right? but you're still able to do the things that you want to do, and you don't have to have a gazillion dollars to be able to think that you can retire and look at some stochastic chart that doesn't make any sense at all to the average human, let alone, you know, the majority of people who are trying to get some confidence in retiring. Have you ever traveled overseas?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the easiest way to watch how powerful purchasing power really works. So when you go in and you trade in your dollars, you've been to Europe?
Yes.
Okay. So you go in and trade in your dollars. If you went to Europe today, here in the first part of 2019, you're going to trade $1.14 for a euro. Okay. In 2010, I think it was, when Barb and I went to Italy last, it was $1.59.
Oh, wow.
Right. Now that's inflation. when 2008 hit, and one of the things we don't recognize is that from central Indiana, from Indianapolis, where I've got an office, or Anderson, where Ken and I are today, driving from here to, let's say, Columbus, Indiana, you can go from Switzerland to France. Right. And back in the Great Recession, the Swiss franc, which is not part of the euro, rocketed so high that here I am, these Swiss people getting paid. Right. And I drove my fanny into France and I bought all the meat. And one of the things that we had in our market carver, which you guys can get signed up for, it's free. Just go to the website at yourlifeafterwork.com. I showed a picture of a French meat counter with no food. That's what inflation looks like in the moment. But what inflation is going to look like over 28 years of your life expectancy, if you really retire at 22, is just as traumatic. You don't want to wind up with no meat in the counter, right? You don't want to wind up out on the road. You don't want to run out of money, but you don't want to be without anything either, right? Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email, yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
We are happy to have you along. Hey, one of my favorite things in life is our Better Giver program that we have at the Financial Enhancement Group. It helps people not necessarily be bigger givers, but it does help them be better givers. One of the things that we try to do is to help people draft their gifting strategy. Ken and I did not know that we had something so much in common until he was heading down to the Super Bowl. So how long have you been involved with the food banks?
I want to say this was my 11th year.
That's a long time.
It is.
And which
is
the
organization?
So go ahead and explain it, because you told me last week.
So every year there's a charity event called Taste of the NFL at the NFL location. So it moves around year to year. It started in 1992 with some chefs out of Minnesota who wanted to give back to the community and feed the hungry people of Minnesota who, you know, didn't have anything to eat. So every NFL city has a player and a chef that goes down to the Super Bowl every year, and they cook up a little dish for about 3,000 people. So it's a big corporate event. Tickets are $500 a piece. Martina McBride played. Miss America used to come down there. Franco Harris was there. So it's a big corporate event. And so last year was the 26th year we were doing it. And Minnesota, we raised about $1 million. Divided equally among all of the food banks across the country in each NFL city. So here in Indianapolis, we raise money for Gleaners Food Bank every year.
Great charity.
It is. It's been a great time. And our chef this year, the last couple of years, has been Chef Tyler from Cafe Patachou. Years before that, it was Greg Hardesty with Recess and H2O. Now he's got a new concept going. And the years before that was Tony Hanslett, who started it here in Indianapolis. Now I think he's still the director or chef director of the Chef's Academy here in town.
Wonderful. I love that. And I think you have to have a gifting strategy to get focus if you're charitably inclined. Some people are, some people aren't. Some people are charitably inclined because of the way it looks. Some people just have a habit of being able to give. And, you know, when I find people who come in and have many, many different deductions on their tax return, it's easy to lose one or miss one. So we try to help them draft a gifting strategy to refine what it is that what their real passion is. And, you know, so Barb and I take care of homeless, hungry people and dogs, not cats. And it's not that I dislike cats entirely, you know, not all of them. Some are cute. but no, we wanted to be as focused as
course,
we possibly could. And, you know, so we Habitat for Humanity, the Christian Center. We partner with Habitat for Humanity so that any of our families that send in a referral. We actually write a check to the local Habitat for Humanity as one of those partnering things that we do. We think it is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So here's what I need you to understand that changed in your taxes, because people are usually somewhere between 3 and 10 years behind on what really happens in taxes. So when you look at your 2017 1040, you had some exemptions that were on your tax return. If you happen to have any kids that are at home, and you and your wife, those exemptions are gone. What happened, though, is they took your standard deduction and they pretty much doubled it. So, Ken, you and your wife have $24,000 of standard deductions. Now, the big three deductions that you have on a tax return are your state and property taxes, mm-hmm. which are now capped at $10,000, right? So in Indiana, most of the time, we're okay. I've got families in Illinois, California, the East Coast. This was a doozy, right? I mean, we've got people who deduct six figures a year in state taxes that are now down to 10.
Wow.
And that's why they're now in Austin, Texas, but that's a whole nother story, right? So state taxes, but it's capped at $10,000 now. Second is mortgage interest.
Correct.
Up to $750,000 of interest you can deduct a year. They did change some of the rules on second mortgages. And actually, if you want to know the truth, they weren't changed. They're just now implicit as opposed to express. That's fancy for taxes that nobody cared. Now they do care. But the other one is the charitable deduction. And what happens when I look at the families that we took care of, the average itemized deduction last year was about $18,000, $18,600, somewhere in there. And almost all of it was charitable gifting. Well, now with the standard deduction being $24,000 for somebody who's under 65, if you're over 65, you get another $1,300. So you're now looking right at $26,600. The majority of our people aren't going to be able to itemize anymore. So if you are over 70 and a half, this is a simple checklist, my friends. If you're over 70 and a half and you have an IRA or could have an IRA, meaning that you've got money in a 401k and you could move it to an IRA. If you're over 70 and a half and you're charitably inclined, the qualified charitable distribution, what's known as the QCD, is almost a no-brainer for people. Be careful. There's some rules. We talk about it all the time. You can find more information on our website. If you just go to our charitable tab, the Better Givers there, and you can sign up to learn about the qualified charitable distribution. I think it is very, very important. We talk about, Ken, and tax diversification when people are in the accumulation mode, right? Remember, tax diversification is when you have some money that is tax deferred. So when we talk about Ken, we use him as example all the time. Ken's got a 401k. The money that his employer puts in for him has to go into the tax deferred column. That means I'm going to pay taxes at some point in time, just not today. I'm kind of kicking the can down the road. And we'll talk about that in the next conversation as well. The money that you put in, Ken, that you're taking out of your check, provided the employer plan has it, could go into the Roth side. The Roth is where you're able to put money in, pay the taxes today, but you don't have to pay the taxes in the future, right? So my 401k at the Financial Enhancement Group's got a Roth option. You're still less than 40% of the plans in the country that have a Roth option. Makes no sense at all. People simply don't understand the rules. Had one of my docs told last week, we don't have the Roth option because your income's too high. There is no income restriction on a Roth 401k. There is on a Roth IRA, right? Same sounding word, different scenario. And then the last is money that you put in that's after tax. So you've got what's called basis in it. So you go back to this charitable gifting, and you've got all of these wealthy people down here, Ken, at the taste of the thing. And they're writing checks, aren't they?
Correct.
Yeah. They're not using appreciated stock. They're not doing qualified charitable distributions. And I know quite a few of your, counterparts that are over 70 and a half, right? We just don't stop to think about the best way to give. And it's better for the charity because you in theory have more money to be able to give away if you want to. It's certainly better for you. It's much better for your taxes. Now, one of the strategies that we would talk about if you were in here is to do what's called double stacking. And what I help people do with that is you essentially itemize 1 year, and then you take the standard deduction next year. Okay, so for people who, let's say, have the standard deduction or itemized deductions of the $18,600, one of the things that we will show them how to do, on top of the QCD, on top of appreciated stock, on top of everything else, the deduction stacking strategy would have them give to their charity in December of this year what they would plan on giving in 2020. So now their itemized deductions for this year would be much greater. And then next year, they're able to turn around and take the standard deduction and get the benefit for it. When you do the math, depending on your bracket, that can be anywhere between a $1,500 and $3,000 tax savings just by being smart enough to understand how the tax code works and being a little efficient with your return. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark with the Financial Enhancement Group, along with Ken Dilger. Go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com. You can find more on the show. Don't forget to sign up for the podcast. Consider This program. Ken and I'll take a break. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
This is Class Session 101, the fifth conversation, where we go over today's show. Remember, if you missed any of the conversations, there are four of them. If you missed any of the conversations, you can always get them on our podcast. Consider This program at iTunes or wherever you like to listen to your podcast. I am a huge fan and devote many hours a week to learning from that type of education. You can also go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com and be able to get the newspaper articles as well as any other shows. So, Ken, our first conversation was about risk and volatility. What is risk?
Risk is different than
different than volatility, yes.
Risk is something that could cause you harm. Volatility is the market going up and down, right?
Price fluctuation. Risk is me not getting my money back. And remember, the number one concept we talked, and that one is how you invest should be based on your need, not your age. So don't think because you're 80 listening to this show that you should be in all in CDs. Don't think if you're 25 listening to this show that you should be all in stocks. We will ask you if you come in, if you're driving too fast, that means having probably more volatile exposure than you know, or if you're driving too slow, it is important, right? Conversation number two, Ken, was real return. And when we say real, we're talking about?
Inflation.
Inflation. And the key thing that we got out of that one is that we want to make sure we're paying attention to the two risks. Yes, some people die early, but there's an awful lot of people that live much longer than they expect. And what we want you to remember is if you make it to age 60, husband and wife, there's a 90% probability, according to actuaries, that one of the two of you makes it to age 90. And so what we want to do in our computations is help you understand whether it's your retirement budget or your retirement practice year, we want to help you differentiate between what is a need and what is a want, right? So when we help you build that retirement budget, we don't tell you that you have to have $2.5 billion to be able to retire. We want you to be able to have enough to be able to take care of your fixed expenses. Inflation does indeed matter. We don't want you to run out of money. We got that. But we also want to make sure that you have enough so that you can enjoy life when you first go into the retirement. Then we moved to the better giver. And Ken talked about his, what was it called? Taste of the Super Bowl?
Taste of the NFL.
Taste of the NFL. I like it. I could be wrong about this. My two favorite sports would be the PGA and the NFL. And I believe that they are the biggest givers on a per capita basis. That PGA wins.
Of course.
But I think the NFL is second out of NBA and baseball. Don't know that to be true, but you know, I like charitably minded people. So what we laid out for you, and again, we'll come into the fourth segment of that tax diversification. But understand that the standard deduction essentially doubled on your tax return this year. And that means unless you are giving more than $24,000 away, well, you've got $10,000 for state taxes and you've got mortgage interest, but unless you're giving a sizable chunk of change away, you may not be able to itemize your charitable gifts anymore, which means we have to use the most efficient processes to be able to get those done. QCDs, qualified charitable distributions. If you're over 70 and a half, you have an IRA or can create an IRA, meaning you've got money in a 401k or a 403b. Those can easily roll to an IRA. If you're over 70 and a half, you have access to IRA money and you're charitable, this literally is a big no-brainer. Secondly, if you have appreciated stock, not in your IRA, but money that you've got that maybe you inherited or maybe you bought along the way or were given as you worked someplace, giving that stock is a double bonus. You get to give the stock without recognizing the long-term capital gain on your tax return and simultaneously get full fair market deduction for it on your itemized deductions. Again, assuming you're still able to itemize. And remember, that has to be a long-term capital gain. But up to 30% of your adjusted gross income, you can do that. And then we're going to talk about deduction stacking. When you come in to see us and we sit down, we're going to go through the five critical elements with you. Right, so we'll talk about your life after work, what that looks like already if you're there, or what it's going to look like in the future with the retirement practice year, the retirement budget. We're going to talk about the annual tax planning. Big part of that is the deduction stacking. We'll go over the investment playbook. Are you driving too fast or too slow or just about right? We're going to talk about life happens, the good, the bad, and ugly of life. And then last but not least, of course, the legacy plan and how all of that works. And all of that really does filter into the better giver, the how you are charitably inclined today, tomorrow, and when you're gone, certainly matters. And the Better Giver program is designed to be able to help you with that. Again, you can go to our yourlifeafterwork.com, our charitable gifting tab, and everything about the Better Giver is there. And then last but not least, Ken, we talked about going to the gym. Right? And does that make sense to you when I say it like that?
Oh, I get it. I mean, many, many years I had to get up at 6 a.m. and get to the complex to work out before my meetings. And
there you go.
It's a rough start.
It is a rough start. But going to the gym is what I would call tax diversification. There is no way around it, folks. Tax deferral is always going to feel best today. It's like eating chocolate cake instead of the broccoli, because you get money back on your taxes today. When you do it, it feels good. And I just had a 74-year-old chemical engineer in here last week, and he said, yeah, I finally got over that you retire at a lower tax bracket idea. Yeah, no. The only way you retire at a lower tax bracket, my friends, is if you have a lower standard of living. And I've not met a lot of people that really want to have a lower standard of living. But do remember, your retirement is not based on your income. You don't have to replace it. You just have to replace the standard of living. And so when it comes time to decide whether you're going to use a Roth, where you're going to pay the taxes today, but know that you never have to pay the taxes in the future, whether you're going to use tax deferred, right, where you're going to pay the taxes in the future, or whether you're going to put it in where it's a taxable account where you pay taxes on capital gains as you go along the way, or taxes on dividends, depending on the type of investment you're in. They all three have advantages and disadvantages. And it's just why when you go to a gym, sometimes you're doing cardio and sometimes it's weights. You do different things, but we want that diversification just like we do inside of the investments. And if you can pay attention to that, we can get a lot of positive things done for you as we go along and build your financial journey to make sure you get to where it is you really want to go. Hey, you've been listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. If you got a question or comment, you can always shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. Don't forget, when you go to the website, to get signed up for our Market Carver. You can find our newspaper articles there, the radio show, if you happen to miss one of the conversations. We look forward to seeing you guys again very, very, very soon. Consider this program at your favorite podcast. Take care.